For your attention, the Rudy Valley Hour. Tonight's headliners, Grace George and William A. Brady. Walter O'Keefe, Bill Robinson.
Everybody, this is Rudy Valley and Company. We point with more than ordinary pride to our lineup for this evening. Grace George, celebrated actress and her famous producer husband, William A. Brady, co-starred for the first time on the air. Bill Robinson, dark genius of Taps, and Walter O'Keefe, scintillating wit. To these add Elizabeth Hawes, America's foremost designer of clothes for women, interviewed on why, in her opinion, fashion is spinach. And a new radio team, Drew Parker and Teddy Hart, with Hildegard Holliday. Add also assorted tunes of a toe-tapping nature, stir well and serve as...
The Rudy Valley Hour, Act One, presented by the makers of Royal Desserts, Royal Gelatin, and Royal Puddings.
You dance, every dance, with the same fortunate man. You have danced with him since the music began. Won't you change partners and dance with me? Must you dance quite so close, with your lips touching his face? Can't you see I'm longing to be in his place? Won't you change partners and dance with me? Ask him to sit this one out, and while you're alone, I'll tell the waiter to tell him he's wanted on the telephone. You've been locked in his arms ever since heaven knows when. Won't you change partners, and then you may never want to change partners again. Kinds of people to make a town like this, New York. Tonight's instance in point, Elizabeth Hawes. Miss Hawes is one of the best known and most consistently successful designers of women's clothes in America. Undisputed leader of that small group of American designers who have challenged the style supremacy of Paris. In short, she's our town's top dressmaker. Miss Hawes recently published a book entitled Fashion is Spinach, in which she outlines her somewhat startling theories of dress. Theories in which both the ladies who buy and buy and the gents who pay and pay will be interested. Miss Elizabeth Hawes. In your considered opinion, then, Miss Hawes, fashion is spinach.
Yes, Mr. Valley. I say it's spinach, and I say, for radio purposes, to Hades with it.
Well, personally, I wouldn't know much about dressmaking, but Doesn't your livelihood as a designer of smart clothes depend upon fashion?
It does not. I'm a maker of style, Mr. Valley, not a fashion monger. Style and fashion are not the same thing.
What is the difference? Supposing you define style and fashion.
Style is an expression of the basic taste of a period in time, as reflected in the clothes of that period. Style is a comparatively permanent quality. It doesn't change every month or every year. It changes only when the lives of people are deeply, fundamentally changed.
And what, then, is fashion?
Too frequently, Mr. Valley. Fashion is the lunatic fringe on the cloak of style. Fashion is that horrid little man with an evil eye who tells you that your last winter's coat may be in perfect physical condition, but you can't wear it. You can't wear it because it has a belt, and this year we are not showing belts, madam. Fashion persuades millions of women that comfort and good lines are not all they should ask in clothes. Fashion is what they're wearing this season.
And who are they?
Nobody really knows, but it would be safe to bet that they often originate in the bright notions department of manufacturers. Style is a product of the times. Fashion is generally a product of salesmanship.
Was it high-pressure salesmen, for example, who decided that the girls must wear their hair up this year?
No, I wouldn't say that. The hair-up idea is a natural result of how the girls are feeling these days.
And how are they feeling?
Romantic, I'd say.
Good for them, bless their heart. To get back to fashion versus style, what would you say is the chief characteristic of good style in this day and age?
Functionalism, as in architecture, designed for use and simplicity.
That outfit you're wearing yourself, I think our listeners might be interested in hearing it described, but not by me. Suppose you describe it.
Well, I have on my entire summer wardrobe. It's a shantung sweatshirt and a very wide gathered black silk skirt. It's designed entirely for use and comfort. My shoes are made of suede with soft soles. They're just like gloves on my feet, with pads under them. My hat is just a piece of spinach, because it's only a brim, but it amuses me. That's what spinach is for, and the hat only costs $5 anyway.
How much would a little number like that dress cost if a customer walked into Hawes Incorporated and asked you to piece it together?
$95, but a smart girl could make it at home.
$95 does sound pretty well out of the reach of the average working girl. Do you think it is possible for the average stenographer, for instance, to achieve style by buying ready-to-wear clothing?
I certainly do.
How is it done?
Well, she should first thumb her nose at they, the fashion peddlers, and think for herself, about herself. Let her decide what type she is, physically, mentally, morally even. Then let her be herself in her clothes. Let her dress herself as an actress dresses for a part.
I understand you have some very positive ideas about men's clothes, Miss Hawes. What do you think of them? Men's clothes, I mean.
If I told you in words of one syllable, Mr. Valley, the networks would crumble to dust and Kansas would secede from the Union. Let it go at this. Men's clothes are impossible.
How so?
Well, take your suit, for example.
You don't like it?
From the point of view of functional style, Mr. Valley, it's a mess. You can't sit down in comfort, for instance, without unbuttoning the coat. And when you sit down, your collar slides up, no matter how well the suit's been tailored. It was tailored to stand up in. You're lucky, and I might say unusual, in that you have a good figure.
Well, if I keep playing tennis and squash rackets, maybe I'll keep it about the place it is now.
Well, it's not too good, really, but far better than average. When the average man gets a fitting, he squares back his shoulders, tucks in his stomach, and tries to look as much like Adolphe Manjou as possible. When he finally wears the suit, he still looks like W.C. Fields.
My little buttercup? What would you suggest? What should I wear, for example? How about designing me a business ensemble right now?
Okay. We'll begin with the trousers.
How about underwear?
I think we should leave that to your discretion. I believe we can count on something simple in the way of shorts without embroidery.
Absolutely without embroidery.
Good. Well, then, I'd run you up a pair of comfortable pants in non-crushable linen.
Crushable?
Non-crushable. Something we girls have had for years. And then you can have a simple tunic coat with large patch pockets, worn outside the trousers with a belt. A straight band around the neck. Tunic zips up front. Collar worn, open or closed, but no necktie. There you are.
That sounds simple, but...
If I have it made, will you wear it at next week's broadcast?
Well, no, I'm afraid I couldn't.
Mr. Valley, are you a man or a mouse? Why not?
Well, for one thing, people would think I was imitating my carefree colleague, Bing Crosby. And for another thing, people might think I was slightly nuts.
What does that make, Mr. Crosby? But I see what you mean. You're scared. Anyway, let me tell you, the day will come, and soon, when men will wear clothes, something like that, to business. If Hawes doesn't design them, someone else will. It's inevitable. Comfort is creeping up on you.
Miss Hawes, I'm sure you have the mass support, if not the individual cooperation of the males of America. Our thanks and best wishes attend you.
Thank you. When you find you want that suit, drop in.
Right now, at the end of summer...
Heralding the entrance of two names of moment and meaning in the American theater, Grace George and William A. Brady. Miss George is, of course, one of our first actresses. Mr. Brady, in private life her husband, has been producing successful plays for a score or more of years, acting in them himself very, very occasionally. This, I believe, is the second time Mr. and Mrs. Brady have been co-starred on any stage. The first time, 30 years ago, a sudden tragedy made it necessary for Mr. Brady to take the leading male role in Miss George's famous hit, Divorçons. Tonight, Grace George and William A. Brady are heard in A Penny a Loaf by Edwin M. Marshall. As our scene opens, we are outside the neat little white cottage of Mary Nolan on the outskirts of the village of Kilkenny, Ireland. Mary, a spinster of about 38, is sitting on a bench looking at the new moon while a friend of hers, Seamus McCarthy, a middle-aged bachelor, puffs at his pipe. Finally, Mary breaks a long silence.
Seamus.
Well, Mary.
It's spring again.
So it is. So it is indeed.
Doesn't it make you feel romantic?
Romantic, is it? Sure, I'm too old for the likes of that nonsense.
Doesn't it make you feel anything?
Well, it makes me feel like taking a nap in the middle of the afternoon, if that's what you mean.
Ah, now, Seamus, have you forgotten we're engaged?
Oh, yes. So we are. So we are.
Oh, we're not getting any younger, you know.
Have you heard from your sister?
Now, Seamus, you can't be changing the subject as easily as that at all. Are we going to be married?
Of course we are. Of course we are.
When?
Any time now. Perhaps next year.
Oh, glory be. I've been listening to that for the last 20 years, and I'm getting tired of it.
Now, Mary, things aren't going so well at all. I'm losing money at the bake shop.
Oh, now it's losing money, is it? Always an excuse. You're afraid of women. That's what's wrong with you. You're trembling in your boots for fear some woman is going to show you she's cleverer than you are.
Well, I'd like to see the woman who could outsmart me girl.
Sure any woman could. Even in the bacon business. Even I could.
Oh, don't make me laugh. Women don't belong in business. They're not cut out for it.
Will you bet on that?
Of course I'll bet on it.
Will you? Will you marry me if I can prove that I'm cleverer in business than you are?
Will I what?
You heard me. Will you marry me?
Well, I'll bet you anything you like, but marriage is a stake. Well,
You see, you are afraid.
I'm not. I couldn't possibly lose. But...
But what? Well, sure, I'm the one that's taken the risk, not you.
Well, let's see. All right, Mary, I'll do it.
That's a promise.
It is. And now, what do you propose to do to show me that you're so brilliant?
Oh, sure, it's very simple, Seamus. You know the bake shop? Across the street from you.
Nora's?
Yes, Nora's. Well, she was telling me the other day she wants to sell it. So I'm going to buy it with the money my uncle left me.
But you'll be competing with me, Mary, with me.
Indeed, and I will, Seamus. And just try and catch up with me, Seamus. Just try and catch up with me. Good dare to you, Seamus.
What is he trying to do, Mary? Ruin the both of us? Why, you're selling bread for less than it costs.
And so are you, Seamus, as I see by your fine new sign.
Well, you've got to stop this nonsense. We're both throwing money away.
Sure, I know that. But it gets customers into me shop. Then if they like what I'm giving them, they'll come back. Goodwill advertising, it's called. I read about it in an American magazine.
But it can't go on forever. I won't let it. What's that you're painting there?
This? Or just another sign for me window?
You mean you're cutting your price below mine?
That I am.
All right. You're cutting your price to threepence a loaf. Well, me fine woman, I'll be cutting mine to twopence.
Ah, will you now? Well, Seamus, you force me to do something drastic.
What's that you're painting on your sign now?
What do you suppose? Bread, a penny, a loaf.
Woman, you're mad. That means losing sixpence on every loaf you sell.
Sure, I can afford it.
Well, anyhow, no woman can bluff me. I'll come down to a penny myself. But let me tell you a thing, Mary Nolan. I wouldn't marry you now if you were the last living woman on this earth and me perishing for the want of you. I'll smart me, will you? I'll stick this out as long as you. Goodbye to you.
Oh, glory be, Nora. This is the moment I've been waiting for. I've got Seamus where I want him.
But, Mary, the shop's full of customers, and you've run out of bread.
Sure, I know that. Psst. I'm going to make a speech.
A speech, is it? Mm.
I'll teach that thick-headed bachelor a lesson he'll never forget. Ladies. My friends and neighbors, there's a man across the street, one Seamus McCarthy, who says I don't know anything about business. In fact, that women don't know anything about business. But I'm out to prove to him that he's wrong. Now, I've got a little surprise for you. I'm going to make it possible for you and all your friends who come in here to get a loaf of bread absolutely free.
Well, how are you going to do that?
How? You see this box?
Sure.
It's filled with pennies, which I'm going to give you.
Yes,
and then in order to get a free loaf of bread, all you have to do is to take a penny, walk across the street, and buy your loaf from me, dear friend, that clever and handsome Mr. McCarthy. Look right up now, ladies. Get your penny. Here you are, Bridget.
Thank you, man.
Oh, you grand. That's grand.
Sure. That was a grand moving speech, Mary. But I don't see what good it'll do you.
Do you not? Sure, you know, when Seamus sells his bread, he's losing sixpence on every loaf.
Sure, and I understand that.
Well, don't you see that if I give out pennies for the customers to buy his bread, I'm only losing a penny on every loaf. And Seamus, the poor man, is losing six.
Mary Nolan, sure, you're the smartest woman in all of Ireland.
Smart? Am I? I wonder. Maybe there's such a thing as being too smart.
I'll be there.
Ah, Seamus.
I'd like to be having a word with you, Miss Nolan.
Oh, come in. After the way you were storming at me this afternoon, I never expected to be laying eyes on you again. Here in me house.
That was a nasty trick you played on me this afternoon. It wasn't a bit clever.
Sure. I'm sorry now.
No, it was unethical. That's what it was, unethical.
So I suppose I've lost me bet.
That sure have.
Seamus. I should never have tried to beat you. It was very stupid of me.
I'm glad you know it.
That I do. And I made you lose money. I'm really grieved. And when I think of tomorrow...
And what about tomorrow?
Sure, I'm afraid you'll be losing a lot more.
What?
Yes. Even though I'm not a bit clever, I've another idea. The like of the one I used today.
What's that you're saying?
Well, if you didn't like the goings-on today, Seamus, you'll certainly not like the goings-on tomorrow.
Mary, you're joking.
Indeed, and I'm not. Today was just a mild sample.
Now, mind you, I'm not saying that you're getting the best of me. But for Sometime I've been of mind to buy Nora's shop. Will you sell it?
Oh, I couldn't think of such a thing at all.
Well, I'll give you a good price, seeing that we've been friends for so long.
Friends, is it? Well, I'm glad to be known just where I stand at last. Friends.
Oh, no. Here. There's no need to be getting angry.
No need, is there? Ah, but wait. Wait till I finish with you, my man. It's a sorry man you'll be. Yes, and a poor one, too.
Oh, for the love of friends. Heaven. For the love of heaven, don't take
years,
on so.
Friends.
But there's something that I've been wanting to be saying to you.
I don't think I care to be hearing any more from you, Mr. McCarthy. Here's your hat.
Is it ordering me out of your house, yard? When it's dying of love I am for you.
Dying of love? Oh, don't make me laugh.
How can you be so cruel, woman? Well, I'm eating my heart out for you.
Eating your heart? Are you sure it's your heart and not your purse?
Well, haven't you thought? Didn't you say so yourself? Why, it's spring.
So it is.
Doesn't it make you feel... Ah, no, Ella, doesn't it make you feel romantic?
Romantic, is it? Sure, I'm a businesswoman. I've no time for such nonsense.
But, Mary, I... Are you going to be busy next Tuesday?
I'll be at my shop, I suppose.
Could you be taking some time off?
Only for something very important.
Would you be marrying me next Tuesday at high noon?
Seamus, you're not fixing the wedding date.
That I am.
Oh, Seamus, of course I will.
And do you suppose I could have a little kiss?
Ah, get along with you now, get along with you.
Come now, don't be a bashful girl.
Oh, Seamus.
Well, now that we're to be married, there's a little matter I think we should be settling. You know me feelings, and I won't be having my wife working in a shop.
Ah, right you are, Seamus. It wouldn't do for me at all. I see that now. It's man's work.
That it is. And I'm happy you see it at last. And I always said that even though you might be know nothing about business, you're an uncommon smart woman.
I'm beginning to think so, Seamus. I'm beginning to think so.
Intermission over. Still in the wings, Bill Robinson, Walter O'Keefe, Lou Parker, and Teddy Hart. And our Mr. McNamee, who with force and precision announces...
The Rudy Valley Hour, Act Two, brought to you by Fleischmann's Yeast, the tonic food that's helping so many people over 40 be vigorous and energetic, that tones up their digestion and supplies four different vitamins.
For summer's closing days, which will find yours truly and our company, tomorrow night in Atlantic City in the Steel Pier, an old favorite of ours, Boardwalk Blues. From the
sea. Makes a wave of gloom break over me. Every happy pair in their rolling chair makes me think how happy I could be. Be curly locks and sporty frocks go by, but the girls inside won't cast an eye. Neptune, king of the sea, send your fairest water daughters up to me and help me lose those boardwalk
Bill Bojangles Robinson, at whose feet the world sits and tingles to the music in a pair of dancing shoes. Bill's tapping toes have won him a world of applause. His grinning personality has won him a world of friendship, including that of his personal idol and brightest pupil, Shirley Temple. Enter William in a dancing mood.
Thank you, Mr. Rudy. I'm not going to Bojangles. I'm going to Ballyhoo. Mr. Rudy, listen. Come on, hands, I need you. Come on, feet, I lead you. Help me get my coat and collar on. Saturday is my payday. Now that's my getaway day. Call me a taxi man, then I'm gone. Why, I'm knocking at your door. Come on, honey, don't be slow. There's a million places we can go. Come on, baby, let's go to town. I feel like kicking that gong around. Come on, baby, let's go ballyhoo. Get your glad rags and put them on. We'll be out till way past dawn. Come on, baby, let's go ballyhoo. Now we gonna dance. Strut our stuff. Drink our gin and highballs till we get enough. Why, the Smith and Joneses will all be there. When they see us trucking, you think they won't stare? Come on, baby, let's go ballyhoo. Damn it, Rudy. Yes, sir. Come on, let's go battle. You know, it's a funny thing happened last Monday. It was a colored boy walked into Pennsylvania Station. He says, I have 9 children. I'd like to have a job. They says, sorry, we haven't got any. He worried the station master so. He says, well, we'll have to give you a job. Say, can you grease switches? He says, I can do anything. He says, be here tomorrow morning at 5 o'clock and we'll give you a job. He goes back to Harlem, says, honey, I have a job greasing switches and I'll start to work tomorrow morning. He goes down to give him a bucket of grease and start him out to greasing switches. So that night at 6 o'clock, he didn't show up. Wednesday, he was missing. Thursday, they got kind of word. So Saturday afternoon, they got a telegram says I'm in Atlanta, Georgia, but I've run out of grease. You know, the funny thing, down south, when you die, they call it setting up. Up north, they call it wake. There's a little fellow laying stretched out in the casket, little everybody singing and praying. A friend of his was behind the stove laughing. So one old sister got up and said, son, you should be ashamed of yourself laughing at boy laying that dead. He says, I ain't laughing at him because he's dead. I'm laughing at him what he said night before last, before he died. She said, what was it? He says, well, we was all over in the pool room arguing. He says he didn't believe there's no heaven, and he didn't believe there's no hell. And I'm just laughing at him laying there all dressed up and no place to go. Ah, just listen to that beautiful music, a symphony of the soft shoe. How can you miss when you've got dead aim? Play it, Mr. Rudy. Now, here we go. This is what we call a little classic soft shoe. Ain't that cute? You know, I hope Shirley's listening in, because this is her dance. Oh, swing them, William. This is what we call the Fifth Avenue skip. That was the left foot. That was the right. I won't cheat you. You can't see them. Ain't that sweet? Now, switching. Oh, they're rocking me now. Rock me again. Even the leather in my shoes is crying. It's so warm. Crescento. Ain't it cute? Now, isn't that beautiful? Just as Eve is falling off the love. I hope the folks in the country are listening in. Here's what we call that skip. Listen to this. Get in.
If you are not interested in what follows, you are not interested in your own happiness, and that is absurd. And so, where do people start getting old? Tonight, new people, Teddy Hart and Lew Parker, new to the extensive networks, but old-timers both at the game of winning chuckles. Mr. Parker comes from musical comedy. High-voiced Teddy Hart has appeared on Broadway in Room Service and Three Men on a Horse. They will be assisted in their lunatic endeavors this evening by Hildegard Holliday. Scene, the Ritz Plaza Grand Hotel and Tourist Cabins. a more or less exclusive summer resort owned and operated by Lou Parker. Mr. Parker is talking things over at the desk with Mr. Hart, his chief assistant, as the curtain rises.
Thank you. Front boy.
Yes, sir.
Run upstairs and find Lou Parker, the manager of this hotel.
Why, you're right behind the desk, Mr. Parker.
So I am. The way this hotel is being run, I can't find anything, not even myself. And as for you, Teddy, you're going to get a raise.
Gee, thanks, Mr. Parker.
From now on, you can sleep on the second floor. Teddy, you know, business is terrible. What do you think's the matter?
Maybe it's because there are only two guests registered.
Two guests? Who are they?
You and me.
I see. When did they check in? Look here, Teddy, where's that fellow I hired to give shag lessons?
He's out getting a transfusion.
I guess that's what the hotel needs. Listen, I'm expecting Mrs. Hildegard von Schlepper any minute. We've got to give her the best of everything. Now, who's in room 637?
Three mosquitoes and a mouse.
Well, get the mosquitoes out of there. It's a single room. And speaking of rooms, I want you to stay away from the chambermaids, especially Tilly on the third floor.
Can I see her on the fourth?
Well, that's another story. Hello? Why, yes, of course.
What
I'll
is it,
send
boss?
It up right away.
What is it, boss?
Mouse of 637 wants ice water. Shh. Careful now. Here comes Mrs. Von Schlepper.
What?
Our troubles may be over.
Oh, what a beastly trip. I'm simply exhausted.
Why, good morning, madam.
Good morning. Are you filled up?
No, I could eat a little something. Where should we go?
I mean, what rooms have you?
Well, Mrs. Von Schlepper, why don't you take the room you had last year?
That thing. I wouldn't let a horse sleep in that room.
Neither will we. The last horse that slept in there ran up a $300 bill and galloped out of town.
And besides, he took two towels with him.
Quiet.
I don't think I'm going to like it here this season.
My dear Mrs. Von Schlepper, the Ritz Plaza affords some of the best views in the world.
Yeah, but the keyholes are too small.
Quiet, Teddy, and from now on, I don't want to see a peep out of you. Thought I told you to keep quiet. Oh, it's a schnauzer.
Yes.
What lovely animal you have there, Mrs. Van.
Oh, thank you, Mr. Parker, thank you. But this is my dog, Tootsie.
Well, I'm sorry to inform you that we don't allow any dogs in the hotel.
Oh, now my Tootsie's hurt.
Why don't you take your shoes off?
I'll have you know he's very valuable. I've already won six blue ribbons in the dog show.
You've won six blue ribbons in the dog show.
I have.
They must enter you every year. Nevertheless, Tootsie will have to sleep in the kennel outside.
Oh, that means I have to move again, and I was just getting comfortable.
Oh, well, what's the difference? Parker House of the Riviera, I'm here, so I might as well register.
Now you're talking. Will you sign here?
Oh, but this isn't a register. It's a blank check.
Don't worry, Mrs. Van Schlepper. It won't be blank long.
Now, at what time would you like me to call you in the morning, madam?
Oh, it's not necessary. It's not necessary, thank you. I can always get up without being called.
Would you mind waking me? I'm a late sleeper.
Oh, by the way, have you a rose room in this hotel?
Not a rose room, Mrs. Schlepper, but I'll show you our goldenrod room.
Goldenrod? Goldenrod? Oh, you shouldn't even venture that word.
Well, why not?
Because of my hay fever.
You've got hay fever?
Oh, yes. To be a bitch of anything like goldenrod starts it.
Gesundheit.
Starts it.
Said that before.
Starts it.
Well, it's unfortunate. Anything we could do to relieve you, you know Ritz Plaza service.
Oh, Dodo, there's nothing you could do. I'll have to call my doctor, Dr. Dozegay. He always tells me what to do.
I can tell her what to do.
Shut up. Our phone is at your disposal, madam.
Give me the phone.
Would you be interested in sanitary plumbing?
Give me the phone.
Well, give me the nickel.
Here.
Thanks.
Operator, operator, I want Claggy Hawk 6. Oh, 6. Oh.
Who are you calling, Renfrew of the Mounted?
Oh, hello, is this Dr. Dose?
Hold your hat, boys, here we go again!
Is this Dr. Dose? Is this Dr. Dose? Yay! Oh, Dr. Dozegay, it's me, yes, it's my hay fever again. What do you want me to do for it? You mean you want me to take some... You want me to take some...
The wolf is at the door. It's a fine thing, madam, you just blew out the east wing.
Oh, well, I'm feeling much better now.
That's good.
Yes, who's going to take my bags up?
I will as soon as I get down from the ship from here.
Well,
a great lady who recently celebrated her 76th birthday, Carrie Jacobs Bond, a medley of her melodies, arranged by Elliot Jacoby and sung by yours truly and our group. And we find at the end of a perfect day
that the dear friends have
Which brings us around to Michael O'Keefe's boy, Walter, pride of the Hartford O'Keefe. Since returning from Europe, Walter has been rusticated at his Connecticut chateau, meditating on life, art, love, war, peace, things and stuff. Full up with funny sayings, he arrives ready to amuse, educate and inspire. Presenting the Broadway hillbilly, Walter O'Keefe.
Thank you, Rudy, and good evening, ladies and gentlemen. This is O'Keefe, the groundhog of radio. I came out last February and cast my shadow and then went back into my hole. Now, I want to explain, if any of you women are curious about my hairdo, I'm wearing it up this season because I feel that way. I love that talk of Miss Hawes, feel that way. You know, Rudy, hearing you introduce me as the Broadway hillbilly brings back to me probably the biggest mistake I've ever made in my life. That being the Broadway hillbilly. If I had only settled in Galveston or El Paso, I might by now be the governor of Texas. But I don't think I'd go very far in politics. I don't think I'd do as a politician. I always get nervous handling large amounts of money, you know. But it's good to be back here in this program with Rudy Valley and his Hurley string ensemble. And with Miss Hawes and Mr. Robinson and Mr. Hart and Mr. Parker. It's good to be back with Rudy, even if he is considering wearing non-crushable linen pants. And mark my words, if Valley ever wears, if he ever does wear non-crushable linen pants, he'll be in for another series of those fistfights of his. But as I remarked, it is pleasant to be back at work. The last time I was on the air, people had a little trouble hearing me. Those earphones were never very good. But tonight, I've enjoyed everything, particularly Miss George and Mr. Brady in that tasty, tempting little dramatic hors d'oeuvre. That little, I always fancy a sous-son of the drama. Or the drama, or if you will, the drama. I always go to the shows. I never miss them. For instance, last week up in Westport, Connecticut, up near where we live, they presented Sally Rand and Rain. Sally was up there for a week in Rain. This week she's in bed with a cold. But I think that La Rand has certainly come up in the world of what we call the intelligentsia. Oh, yes. 3 months ago, she made a speech to the boys at Harvard. Up at Harvard University, she made a speech, and she's certainly well qualified to make one. After all, Sally has seen a lot of the world, and vice versa. Oh, this applause is wonderful. I've been so lonesome for months. And no matter how many times I go down to that zoo, the seals never make up for it, you know. Well, we got a place up in Connecticut, Mrs. O'Keefe and I. That's my wife. I always call her Mrs. O'Keefe. It's not like Rudy's place up in Maine. No, he has a veritable rustic palazzo. You never saw such elegance. 54 bedrooms. 54 baths and a dinette. Oh, it's beautiful. But I love Connecticut. Maybe you've noticed the tan that I've got. I didn't get that in Greenwich. Some people say Greenwich. Of course, if you've got a maid that comes in one day a week to mop up, you say Greenwich. That's fancy. No, I got this tan at Coney Island. I know a lot of you people want to go to Coney over Labor Day, but you're probably a little curious as to how to get there. It's very easy to find. Just go down to the corner of Delancey and Canal Street and follow anybody. I didn't intend to go out there. Candidly, I didn't intend to go there, but I was standing in front of a subway station in Times Square, and a crowd came along and pushed me right out to Coney, right into the water, so I borrowed a rubber bathing suit. They'll never do those rubber bathing suits. It's bad enough having 1,000 kids jump up and down on you when you're on the sand without having the suits made of rubber so that they can bounce. But to be factual about it, I've spent most of my summer going to a beach club up in Westchester, up near Greenwich. You go out to all those beach clubs. It's so restful, you know? You go out there in the afternoon and you see all your friends lying around. Then you go into the bar in the evening and you see all your friends lying around. Up there, we bathe in Long Island Sound. Long Island Sound, and around New York, the water is as pure as a censor's dream. Of course, I'm terrific in the water. The lifeguards say I'm just like a fish. They're always pulling me out. Last Sunday, though, I had an accident. I was in my new bathing suit. Elizabeth Hawes designed it for me. It's functional. If I'm not talking over Valley's head, it's functional. I mean, it's practical. It just doesn't cover the nether parts of my epidermis. No, this serves a purpose, and it suits my type of swimming. It's got a lifesaver and water wings attached. Well, there I was. I ventured out into the turbulent briny. A wave hit me, and somehow or other, I lost my bathing suit. Oh, mon Dieu, was I embarrassed. Gee, was I embarrassed. For the next 3 days, I had to keep running in and out with the tide. I also took up golf this summer, but I think golf as a game is rather expensive. Last week, I broke 100. And when you consider that those clubs cost $6 each, that runs into a lot of money. Personally, I like to play golf in the early morning. I like it best then, you know, I usually tee off at 8 o'clock. I find my ball by 8:30 and I go on. The scene is beautiful and the grass is so dewy. Of course, in New York, everything is dewy all day these days. You can't mention Dixie now. If you mention Dixie, people don't know whether you're talking about cornpone down south or policy in New York. Now, where was I? Oh, yeah, I'm looking forward to Labor Day. Because over here in this country on Labor Day, when we have parades and bands and cheering and salutes, it's a sign that we're preparing for a world's fair, not a world's war. Now, I'd like to stay out here indefinitely, but this fella here with the long arms insists that I've got to go out and address the overflow in the alley, so I thank you very much. And don't forget, Bill Robinson. Bill Robinson just told me that the number 527 is not the one tomorrow. Thank you.
Now, particularly to people over 40.
Why not do what many people are doing to feel young?
This is the National Broadcasting Company.